Hey everybody, it's Rick. Welcome back to the Nomad Pastor Podcast. Hey, today we got a guest in the, I was going to say studio, but it's really in my house.
I mean, this is a studio. Most studios are in houses.
Yeah.
So this is good. You got it set up real nice.
I'm just working through it. So our guest today is Chris Byrne.
A.K.A. Byrne.
A.K.A. Byrne O'Brien, right? So, Chris, I wanted to have you on today. Do you prefer Chris or Byrne?
Byrne. Most people know me by Byrne.
Most people know you by Byrne. So those of you that don't listening don't know Byrne, but I want to spend some time with Byrne talking about his story. And Byrne, you grew up kind of in the motorcycle culture. And,
yeah.
And recently, I will say recently, it's probably 4 years maybe?
Yeah, probably about 3 or 4 years.
I mean, I don't know if you remember, I was at World Outreach when you were baptized.
Yeah, I do.
And
I have video.
So do I.
Yeah.
I was actually looking for it the other day. Yeah. I was like, I got to find that and pull it up for when you're here. But I just wanted to hear your story.
Right on.
I want people to hear the power of God.
Sure.
So you can start wherever you want to start, and I'll ask questions as we do it.
Awesome. Well, for me, growing up, I was raised Catholic, come from a Catholic family. I was born in New York City. My mom was Italian. My dad was Irish. And, you know, in that area, anyhow, it was there's mainly Catholics on the, you know, in that right. area, and so I just, you know, I kind of just ended up in the Catholic Church, and pretty early on, I never really felt comfortable in church, you know, I didn't really feel comfortable, I didn't feel comfortable with the priests, you know, I went to Catholic school, I thought a lot of the nuns were mean, you know, and I don't know, it just never really sat right with me, and I always felt like I was in trouble.
Yeah.
And truthfully, I really was in a lot of trouble, you know, I was a young kid, I didn't have a lot of, you know, I came from a very dysfunctional home, broken home, and spent a lot of time on the street, even as, you know, as a really young kid, I was exposed to a lot of things that are questionable for adults and outlandish for, you know, a young person.
Right.
But the truth is, you know, I mean, at that age, my perception of those things, they were kind of cool. You know, I seen older people doing things and just, you know, whatever. And, you know, I looked up to those people, so I wanted to emulate what they were doing, and I really didn't. You know, when you're a kid, you don't have a real sense of right and wrong, you know, or why things are right and wrong. And I always had a rebellious nature about myself anyhow.
Right.
And, you know, I just always felt out of place. I got an older brother. I have a younger brother. My younger brother at the time, he was pretty much a baby. And my older brother was already involved in gangs and stuff like that. And that the area that I grew up in, it was actually in the center of three separate projects. So, you know, just to draw kind of like a mental picture of the elements that I was dealing with, you had to have certain clout or behave a certain way to kind of, you know, survive, you know, and you had to, I guess, be cool in that sense, you know, along the street wise to be accepted and, or at least not to get bullied and beat up.
It was all about perception.
Yeah, right? it was totally.
The perception had to be that you could hold your own. That
yeah.
You were cool. You were part of that clique, right?
Yeah. You know, being part of the clique was a lot safer than not being part of the clique.
Absolutely. It was,
you know, and I had already, you know, because my home was, you know, very dysfunctional and I wasn't safe there. I wasn't safe at school because I didn't feel safe.
Yeah.
And, you know, I wasn't going to, if I had control over anything, or at least, you know, my perception of control as far as being on the streets, that's really where I felt the safest, to be honest with you, you know? Yeah. And, you know, because, you know, being in church and being in a Catholic school as an altar boy, I sang in the choir, you hear, you're exposed to, I what I refer to now, or how I look at it, is people's renditions of scripture, you know, interpretations of it.
That's a great way to say it.
You know, they, and I don't necessarily think that from, you know, from where they were, I don't think that their intent was to be negative. I just think that, you know, the people are control freaks, and
that's right.
You know, they have a desire to help you get closer to God, but instead of following the Bible, they follow their own intuitions, you know, and they themselves become the authority, so to speak.
Yeah, just like the Pharisee of the old.
Yeah, you know, and again, you know, as a younger man, a rebellious young man, that was learning most of his, you know, survival lessons from the street, when someone came to me with that, I rebelled, you know. I certainly rebelled. And it made me, you know, it gave me the perception of myself that I was bad.
Yeah.
You know, and that, and those were, and it wasn't just the church, you know, I can't blame it all on the church. It was a bunch of things, you know, because I'd get it at home. I was always in trouble and grounded. So it just backed that stuff up, but it really got ingrained into my head that I was a bad person.
Yeah, it was like a perfect storm.
It really was.
Right? Like, I grew up in Salt Lake City, Utah. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know if you know that about me, but where I grew up, it was like 80% Mormon.
Wow.
And so while it wasn't that Catholic religion, right, it was this Mormon religion that I didn't understand. Mm-hmm. And even when I read the Bible, I didn't understand it, because what they taught was kind of opposite of what the Bible said.
Right.
You know, my parents weren't religious. Like, I, you know, we talked before we started recording this that, you know, kind of the background I came from. And so there was no religion there. And so I was just the heathen of the neighborhood, right? Mm-hmm. Parents, people didn't want their kids playing with me. And so what do? You rebel.
Right.
Right. You rebel and say, well, if I'm the heathen, if I'm the bad kid, let me show you what a heathen is.
Right. Yeah. You know, and... You know, it's the other thing that I saw too was, you know, it seemed that I would be given all these rules of, you know, this is what it means to be a good person, and this is what you have to do to get into heaven. You know, I really didn't have because I'm still a kid, you know, I didn't have like this great understanding of the Bible or Christ or anything like that. It was, you know, I knew the stories, but they were just stories, and the so-called authorities that were, you know, kind of barking these stories at me, you know, do this or you're gonna burn in hell. And then I'd see their behavior outside of them talking about that stuff, and then I just felt like, well, you're a hypocrite, man. Right. You know, and I would rather, you know, I mean, it's like, I if I'm gonna be bad, I just want to be bad. I don't want to pretend I'm good.
That's right.
You know, and that's, you know, that's very early, like really, like as soon as I started to. I'm talking about like 8, you know, 8 years old, you know, I started to develop these, and that really became me, you know.
Yeah.
That's how I was living, and I didn't have anything to counter that. I didn't have anybody, just through circumstance, you know, I don't think it was because I was being necessarily picked on or whatever. It was just the circumstance. I didn't have anybody to counter that and say, hey, look, let's read the Bible. Let me explain this to you, how you can understand it in a language that you can understand. Because of course there's, you know, I mean, still I'm 47 years old. I read the Bible and I'm still like, I don't even know what that word means. I have to go look it up. Today we have the advantages of Google and right. things like that. But
and look, I struggle with that too.
Yeah.
I mean, I know there's a lot of people that are like, oh, the only version of the Bible is the King James version. Right. Right? There's a lot of KJVers, but I don't speak King's English. Right. And I don't know how to break it to them, but neither did Christ.
Right.
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 And there's a lot of translations, I think, for that reason. Right. It's going to speak to people the way God needs to speak to them when they need it.
Right. I mean, when Christ was, you know, here on earth the first time, the language was Aramaic.
Yeah.
You know, people don't even realize that.
That's right.
You know, you say, well, they spoke Hebrew. It's like, what?
Well, they spoke Aramaic. And they wrote in Hebrew.
Right. You know, but it's like they never, you know, they never kind of put that together. But, Yeah, so, you know, that's kind of like from that point as a young man until, you know, all through my adult life, I kind of set it up to be, you know, it's like since I was going to be bad, I was going to be bad, like you said, you know, like people are going to say, you know, I wanted to be big, bad, you know, Leroy Brown, you know, he's the baddest, you know, that's guy right. in town.
That's right.
And that's, and I felt like if that was going to be the case and that was going to be my badge and well, I wasn't.
You know, at some point you want, when you're in that mindset, at least for me, right? I wanted, when people thought of who was the baddest person they knew.
Right.
Like the guy they wanted on their side in the foxhole.
Right.
Because we're fighting. Right. Who do they want? Who's the meanest man that they want? I want them to always think of me.
Yeah. Yeah.
I want Rick with me because he's not just going to hurt somebody. He's going to hurt them and everybody they love.
Right. Right. It's going to be the extreme. It's not going to be the standard operating procedure. It's going to be what just happened, you know?
That's right.
I had that mindset, but you know, it was, the thing is that externally to people, when I would, I would express myself or whatever, that's what they got. They got the, you know,
yeah.
this is not a person you want to cross for a whole lot of reasons.
Right.
But internally, by myself with the conversations in my head, it was like, I was empty, man. And I knew it. Like I had such a hole inside of me and it really physically hurt, you know, it would almost make me like feel borderline nauseous all the time. Like I was hungry and it hurt. It made me sad. And you know, that's not something, if you're the big, bad, tough guy, that's not stuff that you express, you know, you don't show that you're vulnerable because then you're no longer the baddest guy in the room that, you know, nothing affects that person. And,
yeah, for sure.
But I knew it inside and I would always, again, because I didn't really, all I really had was as far as resources on how to reach goals and stuff. It was all street stuff.
Yeah.
You know? So that's what I try to fill those, you know, that emptiness with, you know, lots of things, man, drugs, violence, you know, anything that would distract me from the internal pain that I was feeling. And for a long time for me, it was drugs. You know, I got heavily into drugs and I bottomed out, you know, really quick, you know, because when I got into drugs, I was a young person, you know, I was really young and again, I was extreme.
Yeah.
So I went hard to the point where my body really could not handle, you know, the amount of drugs that I was taking. I had already reached like that level of like, man, it's like you're chasing that dragon, but you're never going to get there and your body physically cannot handle this. And I ended up, you know, it was kind of weird in high school. I ended up going into a rehab, by choice because I hit a bottom. I really hit a bottom.
It's insightful, I think, to be in high school and go, I need to go to rehab.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't, here's the thing. It wasn't even so much that I was like, I need to go to rehab. It was like, man, I don't know what to do. And I know that there's a big problem and I certainly need a change in my life. And I don't know what that change is, but it has to be something. And since I don't have the answer, I'm going to reach out to somebody, you know, that may be able to steer me in a direction. And the person that I went to was, you know, I was a counselor in the high school. And of course, I didn't know that I was, you know, addicted in that sense, but everybody else that we knew it, you know,
right. All your friends were like, I could have told you that.
Yeah. You know, everybody knew, my parents knew, the doctors knew, the high school knew. I mean, I was, you know, cause again, I was just rebelling hardcore.
Yeah.
And, they said, okay, you know, we'll get you in a rehab. And I thought like, all right, well, we'll have a couple of weeks. And they had me in, you know, they had me in the next morning, you know, I don't know that I would have lasted that long. I was in bad shape.
It's scary too.
You know? So, you know, that started, that certainly was a change in my life. where I, you know, I the chemicals came out of my life. You know, I still had the behaviors, the attitude, the mindset, but the chemicals came out, and I knew that that was going to be something that I had to change, because it was I saw it killing me, and I felt it killing me.
Yeah.
So it was an easy thing to get my finger on the pulse of and say, you know, obviously if you hold a stick of dynamite and light the fuse, you're going to explode. Well, for me, it's like, obviously if you go and you start doing drugs, you already know where you're going to get to that stopping point where you're just completely incapacitated, and not because you're high and having such a good time. You're incapacitated because your body is dying and
right.
and you're in pain,
right.
you know? And on top of that, you know, by that time, the drugs that I were taking to distract me from this hole that I was feeling, well, now I was in pain from, you know, all the drugs, and I had this hole that was never filled, you know? And so I was in a bad way, man. I was in a real bad way.
I used to tell my wife that I have an addictive personality.
Right.
Because I don't do anything like a little, right? And now she'll tell people, like, they should call you All In.
Yeah, All In.
Because right. you're all in everything you do, right?
Right.
But I used to tell her that because, you know, there were drugs I did when I was growing up, but there were drugs that I refused to do.
Mm.
And I only refused to do them because I knew that I would love it.
Right.
But it was, for me, it was all about masking the pain.
Always.
Of everything that I had going on.
Yeah.
Right? And that's what it is. Like, and when you're masking that pain, when you remove that mask, you still have the anger, and you still have all of these feelings that you haven't dealt with. You haven't dealt with them because you just masked them.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's like what I, you know, what was revealed to me is that, you know, the physical stuff, in that sense, they were just symptoms of the bigger problem.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't know that. I didn't understand that. I was just right. kind of trucking through life, man, doing the best I could, you know, as a young person that was, you know, I shouldn't have been in charge of anything. I shouldn't have been calling any types of shots and making decisions. But because of, you know, because of my home life and just all these other things, there was no other option.
Right.
It really was like fend for yourself. And, you know, and it's not, I don't blame people. I don't blame my parents because they had their things going on, but it was still the perfect storm. You know, and I know that that's not what they wanted for me. And I, you know, and it wasn't like they were pushing like, yeah, go, you know, be a junkie or whatever. My father was a police officer.
Yeah.
You know, my mother, always into her faith, you know, always, she was a Christ follower for so long. I didn't even know that until I got saved, but she was, you know, she was very active in her faith. And, you know, I just progressed through life that. But after I got clean, you know, I would go to AA meetings, NA meetings, because I really had to, because it was at that I knew, like, look, man, if I don't do something to combat this desire to go out and harm myself, you know, with chemicals, that's exactly what's going to happen. I'm just going to go back. So I, you know, really out of fear of getting back in that hole, I, you know, I'd go to these programs and I, you know, I learned a lot of stuff and I was still super angry. I mean,
right.
Unbelievably angry. I would, you know, I would grind my teeth while I would talk, and it was kind of like, to other people, it was kind of silly how angry it was. Like, how could you be that angry all the time, you know?
Yeah.
And, but that was really when I was kind of reintroduced to the idea of God. You know, because in the 12 steps, the only one that really talks about any types of chemicals or anything like that is the first step.
Yeah.
Everything else is, you know, it's a spiritual program.
Yeah, higher power.
Yeah, higher power, you know, and my relationship with God was volatile. You know, I mean, I was mad at God because I figured all these things that had happened in my life and my family and, you know, just everything, it was God's fault.
If you're so good, God, why did you let this happen?
Right, you know, like,
why did you do that to me?
Right, why did you, like, and some of it was so crazy. It was like, man, you really had to go out of your way to really throw me under the bus, man.
Right.
You know, and that was, again, that was my understanding, and there wasn't anything to combat that. There was no... At that time, there was no person in my life that could say, hey, it doesn't, you know, look at it. Here's another way to look at it. Or let me just give you my perception of it. And then, you know, it wasn't even that. And I don't even know that I would have heard that at that time because I was so angry. And, you know, that was my mission. And, you know, from that time to, you know, really until my late, you know, my early 40s, you know, I was involved in lots of gang-oriented organizations. You know, even though some of them, they're labeled gangs, I don't really see them as gangs. But, you know, it's a tougher crowd, you know?
I would agree with that.
Yeah, you know, it's a tougher crowd, you know, but I got into, you know, biking and just hanging out with lots of guys that were, you know, in motorcycle clubs and it was appealing to me because, you know, the sense of the biking community is all about brotherhood and having each other's backs. And once again, you know, it's like, I felt insecure, not insecure in the sense like insecure about myself. I just felt like insecure. Like I was always in danger.
Yeah.
You know, and I had to have, you know, it's like being in the brotherhood felt like, you know, a gun in my pocket or a switchblade in my back pocket, you know, so if something happened, I could pull that. And, you know, and I don't mean it like physically, like a gun or a switchblade. I just felt like the, you know, the crew was my switchblade.
Well, it's a security.
Yeah.
Right. Like, do you know who Francis Chan is?
I don't.
So Francis Chan was a pastor in California and he had this church that was like 5,000 people.
Right.
Huge church. And he said that he was preaching and he noticed that this kid from the community had come in and he was a member of a gang.
Right.
And he had walked away from the gang to go to church and they baptized him and he's following Christ. And Francis Chan tells this story and you can look it up on YouTube. Mm. But he says after a couple months, he recognized that the gang member wasn't there. So he went to find him. Like, what happened? And he found him back with the gang. And he asks him, he says, why are you back here? And the kid says, he says, you know, when I joined the gang, they're my family. They are with me forever. They support me. They know me. They have my back, right? He says, I expected church to be the same way. And it wasn't.
Right.
And so I understand when you're saying they're my brothers. It's a brotherhood because it is.
It is.
They are family. I knew I can call at any time, day or night, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week and say, I need help. And they're going to be there.
Right.
And that's appealing when you've never had that.
Yeah, certainly. You know, right? You know, and you know, and because it's again, it's street related, you know, even with family, you go to, you know, with me anyway, if you went to family, you might get some tough talk and you might get some, yeah, I got your back, but it would never get past that, you know, where, you know, a brotherhood or a gang, you know, hey, this guy gave me a hard time. Well, yeah, then 40, 50 people are going looking for that guy.
That's right.
You know, and it's, and it did. That was appealing to me. You know, at that time, that was appealing to me because I was still very angry and vindictive and, you know, just whatever. But I still had that huge hole in my heart, man.
Yeah.
You know, and what I thought would, you know, I thought, well, here's this, you know, brotherhood and we got each other's backs and stuff. I thought that that would kind of relieve that, you know, it would fill that and I'd finally feel like I was home, you know? Yeah. And it didn't. It did not. And you know, and I progressed as, you know, as I got older, I progressed and I moved on to bigger organizations, you know?
Yep.
I finally got to a point, you know, right where I was biking and brotherhood pretty much had become my thing. Like, that was my life. That's what I wanted to do. That's where I felt like I really fit in. I love riding my motorcycle. I love being on the road all the time. And, you know, and I ended up hooking up with a club that you know, that was like, hey, that's the norm for us. That's what right. we do, you know. You want to go out for 2 weeks on your motorcycle, come home for a day and go out for another 2 weeks? We do that.
That's right.
You know, you want to wake up in Nashville at 8 o'clock in the morning and go to sleep in Florida at 8 o'clock at night? We do that, you know. So, you know, I that's
with clubhouses everywhere that have bunk rooms, right?
Yeah, I mean, it was like, man, this is really awesome.
Yeah,
and you know, I got into that and I did that, you know, I did that stuff, and I met some great, really great people, and I was able to develop some really great relationships, and you know, not so good ones, but for me, it certainly felt like it was. It was a fulfilling experience, you know, and I was, as crazy as it sounds, as much as I was exposed to questionable behavior, I was also, you know, from this organization, I was also exposed to like, hey man, your behavior is not good. You're a better man than that. You need to step up your game, you know, from an organization that would be considered a criminal organization, you know, right. And those people who I admired, and these are tough people. I'm not talking about just your average. They really were the baddest of the bad, you know?
I would agree with
Yeah. that. And, you know, when they're saying, hey, man, that stuff, that's not, you know, what you're doing, you know, that's what people think we're doing. That's not what we're doing. This is what you need to be a better man, you yeah. know? If you want to be a good brother, then being a good brother isn't just going along with whatever your brother says. If your brother says, you know, you got my back, right? And you say, yeah. And then he says, well, cool, because I'm going to go jump off this bridge. You're going to help him with that? Is that brotherhood to you? And, you know, you'd think like, oh, well, that makes sense. Of course you wouldn't help that. But it didn't. It didn't make sense. It's like, well, if that's what my brother wants to do, that's what I'm, you know, I got his back 100%, you know. And brotherhood is going to your brother and saying, you're going to be mad at me, but I don't care because I love you.
That's right.
And I'm going to tell you how it is, man. And what you're doing, you're out of line and you're heading down a road. And as an adult or whatever, you're going to make your own decisions, but I'm not going to participate in that. And I'm not going to help you with that.
Right.
You know, if that's what you're going to do, that's what you're going to do. And if, you know, when it fails, I'll be here to pick you up if you're ready to change that behavior. But no, I'm not going along with nonsense. And it was so opposite of what I thought it was, you know, in that sense. I thought it was going to be, you know, we gotta just be reckless animals, really, you know?
Yeah, I saw that growing up too, right?
Yeah.
Like people's perception
yeah.
of the club life, right? And when I say the club life, I mean the big clubs.
Yeah.
Right? There's like 5 or 6 big ones.
Right.
Right? People's perception is like they're heathens.
Right.
They do nothing good.
Right.
Right. They're sitting in their, you know, their clubhouse talking about all the bad stuff they're going to do.
Right.
Right. That's the perception. Right. It's like, and I tell people like this isn't Sons of Anarchy. Right.
Just, right. Sons of Anarchy. I mean, that's
a TV show.
Right. And it's a drama. I mean, it's a story.
They're making stuff up to right. make you watch it.
Right. It's right up there with Pinocchio.
That's right.
Right.
That's right. And so, you know, it's interesting to hear you say it, right? Because from the outside, people are like, aren't you afraid to go there? No, what are you talking about? Right. That's the safest place in the city.
Right, right, yeah. Yeah, of course. You know, and so that club, which is, you know, as far as motorcycle clubs in the world, it is, you know, it was a one percenter club. It's one of the oldest one percenter clubs. It's a top club. It's part of the original Big Four.
Yep.
Long history, you know, and
some great men. Let's just be honest.
Outstanding men. There's a lot of outstanding men
in that club.
And I, you know, a lot of people that I respect and admire in that club. I think with any organization, regardless whether it's a church organization or the mafia or I mean whatever, you're gonna have characters that get in there for wrong reasons and behave a certain way, and I think a lot of times that stuff gets weeded out. Sometimes it doesn't, and you kind of cross paths with those people, and you could choose to, you know, what level you deal with them at. But my experience was the majority of the people that I met in the club that I had become close with, I did bond with like on a whole other level because, without having to make myself vulnerable, they would take my inventory and just be like, no.
Right.
You know, because they're all alpha guys, so they're not going to ask for your permission in that sense. They're just going to say, no, that ain't going to fly, man. Yeah. You know,
we don't do that.
Yeah, we don't do that. You know, and for a hard head like me, it's like, well, I'm going to do it anyway. And then, you know, they're hard heads and they're going to say, well, then you're going to end up with a black eye.
That's right.
You know, like, this is what we're going to do to correct that behavior. So you're left with a choice, you know, and it's
out of love.
Yeah, out of love.
We're doing it out of love.
Right. And then you're left with the choice, you know, which one is more important to you, that doing that bad behavior or dealing with a black eye?
Yeah.
So it's like, well, I can avoid all of that by not doing that behavior. So, you know, some of that behavior was certainly corrected, and I was able to grow as a man anyway.
Yeah.
Because I had some direction from experienced men in that lifestyle. And you know, and it did. But the thing that was most profound to me was that Christian motorcycle clubs would be in those situations, you know, with those clubs.
Yeah.
You know, we used to joke around, we'd call them the God Squad.
I actually have a shirt that one of your guys made.
With the hands. The
for us, that says, you know, member of the God Squad.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, I mean, that stuff, it was funny, and, you know, and I would goof on some of these guys, you know, from once, you know, one side, but internally, I was kind of like, I could see that they looked full. They didn't look lost.
Yeah.
You know?
I agree with that.
And I was still very lost. And, you know, and here's the thing, you know, the guys that are in those clubs, even though they were the God Squad, you're talking about some serious characters with some serious backgrounds, man. You know, some
I know for a fact.
Right.
Yeah.
And
they've done some stuff.
Yeah, they've done real stuff. You would think, you know, you would see in Sons of Anarchy, you know.
Right.
I mean, like,
right,
that dramatic. So when they, you know, when
there's a lot of them who came from 1% clubs,
right,
let's be honest.
Yeah, there are, you know. And so when they spoke, regardless of the topic, their words carried some weight with me. And actually, I won't say some. Their words carried a lot of weight with me. And, you know, even though it's kind of funny looking back on it, even though I wanted to have a relationship, some type of relationship or understanding with God, I didn't want to talk about it. I didn't want anybody to know that I wanted that. And there was this big wall, and the wall for me was a lot of insecurities about who I was. How could I, you know, I a lot of things that I understood, you know, at that point, the way I understood it, I was wrong. You know, I thought, well, you know, if I'm going to have a relationship with God, then I got to give up all the good stuff that I like doing, you know, all
right,
the bad stuff, you
right,
know, because how would God take me, not even Christ, just God. I wasn't even at the Jesus Christ thing yet, you know. It was like, how is God going to take me seriously if I'm doing all these things that I enjoy doing and I'm not going to give them up? So I guess that's, you know, there's the, you know, that's all the excuse I need.
Check. I don't need that.
Yeah, I'm good. You know,
I remember after I came to Christ and Linda's like, you know, we should go to church. Like, I can't go to church. I don't have a suit. Right.
Yeah.
I smoke. I drink. Like all these, like, I can't go to church.
Right.
Like they won't let me go to church. And she's like, what are you talking about?
Right.
And I'm like, I can't go in there. And she's like, we're going to church, and there's going to be people in there in shorts and flip-flops.
Right.
And I'm like, well, I never heard of that.
Yeah. I'm like, what?
Seriously? Shorts?
Yeah. I mean, and that's the whole thing. That's the perception, you know? And that was certainly my perception.
Yeah.
You know, anything that had to do with that, you know, included khakis and penny loafers.
Right.
And that's, you know, that's not where I am. That's not where I'm at in my life,
that's
you
right.
know? And anyhow, just through conversations with some of these guys, I developed really like good personal relationships with them. And I would go, and if I was having a hard time with something, because now I could, they were my brothers. Even when we were in different clubs, they were like part of my network of people. Like, I can trust these people, and I can go and share what's really on my mind, and they can give me feedback that I can either, you know, leave or take, you know? and they wouldn't force it on me. And it wasn't even faith-based feedback.
Yeah.
You know, which is what kind of like kept the door open for me. And I would say, hey, you know, I'm just having a hard time with this, or I'm just depressed, or, I mean, I was always depressed, but, you know, more depressed than usual. And, you know, and they'd give me little suggestions. Oh, well, check this out, man. You know, I like to read. So they say, oh, read this or check this out and whatever. And they said, well, you know, we're not trying to scare you away by getting, you know, talking about God. We don't want to run you down the road. And at that point I was, you know, kind of reaching the end of, you know, my journey without Christ. You know, I said, look, I came to you for your opinion because I trust your opinion. If you got something to say, say it, because I'm out of resource, man. I'm looking for direction.
I'm out of options.
I'm out of options. And trust me, I've spent 40 years trying to figure some of this stuff out. And it's like, I'm running on fumes, man. And I don't really know what to do. And, you know, so they'd give me little stuff. They wouldn't bombard me with faith-based stuff, but they would give me little seeds. And
I think there's a huge misconception for people about what Christian clubs or motorcycle ministries do.
Right.
I think there's this perception that we go out to the motorcycle community and we just beat you over the head.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, oh, you're going to go in there and preach to them? No, I'm going to go have dinner.
Right, we're going to go hang out and ride motorcycles.
If they have a question, I'm going
to
answer it.
And that's what was there for me.
Yeah.
I had a place to go with my questions.
That's right.
And I got some answers and I got suggestions. And I knew, like, all right, well, I've tried all these other things and they didn't work. So I might as well try some of these new things. And if they don't work, they don't work. But if they do work, then, you know. And I didn't expect them to work, but at least it kept me busy.
Yeah.
And it got me out of the, you know, kind of got me like motivated again to kind of work on some of this stuff. And my life was getting really bad, really, really bad. And I was tired. I was really tired. And, you know, the only thing that would calm me enough at night for years, you know, so I could fall asleep was just the thought of myself in a casket dead. And that's what I went to sleep to every night, you know, and it just, and it got worse from there, you know, like even that wasn't enough. And because, you know, I was, you know, in AA and introduced to God. And even though I had this volatile relationship with God, I was just praying, man, just kill me, man. Just let me die in a motorcycle accident, a car crash, some gang related. I don't care. Just like, I'm done. I'm tired. But that's where I was at, you know. I was out of options. I just didn't have the, I didn't have it in me anymore, man.
You just got to the end of you.
I did. I literally got to the end, and I knew it. You know, I really knew it, you know. And I had a friend that's, you know, from a motorcycle ministry that I had spoken to a lot, just about, not even like faith stuff, just like we just became really good friends, you know, one person in particular. And so we would talk all the time about everything, guns and, you know, riding and camping. I mean, whatever topics, we just talk about it. And we were at this, we were at my clubhouse, and he said to me, hey, do you ever think about taking the plunge, meaning, you know, becoming a Christian?
Right.
And I said, honestly, I have thought about it. And I wish that I could be there. You know, I wish that I could really be in that spot. And I would never do it unless it was sincere, you know, and it's not sincere. You know, I have too many questions. I have too many, excuses. I'm just not there, you know? And he said, well, if you ever think, you know, if you ever I'm just letting you know. You know, he just kind of threw it out there like, now you know where to go if you ever get there. You know, right. You can always come to me. And I knew that before, but now it was just kind of like, now we both knew that I knew.
That's right. He's like, I'm just letting you know. I know that you know that I know.
Right. You know, and in my brain, I dismissed it. But the conversation that I really had with myself is, you know, you're trash. You know, you're trash. And, you know, God, you know, I couldn't even say Jesus Christ without feeling embarrassed or awkward. I really couldn't, unless I was cursing. you know, or using it in that sense. Then I could say it all the time, but to be like, to just be like, you know, just say Jesus Christ and not have anything follow, it made me feel so weird, man. It's so awkward. But you know, I was like, there's no way I could do that. I enjoy doing bad things. I'm a bad person. I've done so many things, and just like, I just, you know, and I don't have a suit.
Right.
You know, I don't have the suit and, right. You know, khakis and penny loafers. I don't have that stuff. So I guess it, you know, I'm out anyway. But, because I had been having these conversations with some of these, you know, different people on just my, where I was at emotionally in this emptiness and this hole that I felt, and I just couldn't bear it anymore. They had started giving me like all this like literature, and it was like, it's weird because even though it would mention God and I was kind of comfortable with that, it wasn't like it wasn't like hardcore stuff, like, you know, you have to do this, and, you know, it wasn't like that. So I did read it, you know, I started reading that stuff, but it also kind of like, I looked at it and it was like being outside of a toy store, looking through the window, like, man, I wish I had all them toys, but they're on that side of the glass.
That's a great analogy,
right? You know?
Yeah.
You know, and
I don't have the money.
You know, there's a lot of kids that are going to have that stuff, you know, on that side of the glass, it looks great. On this side of the glass, not so good. I'm pretty miserable. And I'm actually sad that I can't get those.
And toys. It's cold out here.
And it's cold and lonely. You know, and it just created all these, you know, these thoughts in my head that really just made me feel worse and worse and worse and worse and worse. And I still had no intentions of, you know, coming to Christ or anything like that. I mean, literally zero intentions. As a matter of fact, I put it out of my head. Like, maybe in a couple of years, you know, I'll get older and I'll feel differently, whatever. Like, I just put it out of my head. And I was working on a project. I do IT.
Yeah.
And I was working on a project in a head end, and I had been working with this guy. It was like a 1 week project. And, he was, you know, he was a cool dude, you know, he was a smart guy, and we were talking all kinds of tech stuff and just whatever. And, he said, "Hey, you want to go out to lunch?" It was on a Tuesday. I said, "Yeah, man, let's go." So we went out to lunch and we ordered, and right before he ate, he prayed. And I just thought to myself, oh, this guy is part of the God Squad, right. You know? I didn't say anything. Yeah. And then we just kind of kept it moving. We didn't discuss that he prayed, didn't have any religious conversation, nothing like that. And went back to work, and that week was starting to end. You know, we were getting towards the end of the week, and Thursday, he said, "Hey, man, let's go out to lunch again." So we went out to lunch, and he prayed again. And I said, "Look, I know this is work stuff, and if you just want to keep it work stuff, I'm totally cool about it, but I'm curious about something." And he's like, you know, he said, "What?" I said, "I noticed you prayed the other day, I noticed you prayed today. You religious or something?" You know? And he says, "Well, actually, you know, I'm a Christ follower. I used to be a youth pastor, and, you know, he just kind of gave me a little bit, you know, a little bit of his story. He didn't really go into depth about it." I said, "Man, you know, it's funny that, you know, I mean, we're even having this conversation because one of my buddies was, you know, because now he's kind of opened himself.
Right.
Now it's
right.
Personal. It's not work.
Absolutely.
You know, and
you can start asking questions."
Yeah. And I said, "One of my buddies said to me, you know, a week ago, would you ever take the plunge?" I'm like, "But, you know," I said, "honestly, you know, I'm trash, you know, like I'm trash." And he said to me, he said, and believe me, I had tons of questions, tons of excuses, and they were rock solid.
Absolutely. They always are.
They were rock solid. And he says to me, "So I'm going to ask you a couple of questions, and they're not trick questions. Just answer them as I ask you." I said, "All right." And he says, "If I take a $100 bill and I put that $100 bill in your hand, what's the worth of that bill?" And he says, "Not a trick question." I said, $100. He says, "Yep, right. It's $100. So if I take that same bill and I rub some dirt on that $100 bill and I put it in your hand, now what's the value of that bill?" I'm like, $100. He says, "What if we take that same bill and we rub some more dirt on it and I crumple it up and I put it in your hand? Now what's the value?" I'm like, "Still $100. He's like, "Right. No matter what you do to that bill, $100 bill, its value is always $100. And no matter how crumpled and dirty you ever become, your value will never change when it comes to Jesus Christ." And I just about fell out of my chair.
So it's like a light bulb moment.
I tell you what, in that moment, every question I had, every excuse I had, I literally felt it leave my body. And I just, I, I, started to sob in the restaurant, right with people around me. I started to sob, and I was just like, the audacity of me to think that God didn't know who I was before, you know what I'm saying? Like, I just realized, like, he knew me this entire time in that very moment.
Praise God.
And, you know, and the guy who I only knew that week put his hand on my shoulder. He said a little prayer. I don't recall the prayer, but I do recall it feeling like a warm blanket. And I, you know, because I was really, like, upset, you know? I really felt like all that stuff that I had been feeling and just all that depression, it was like now I was like it was flowing.
Yeah, it opened up some channels.
It really did, you know? It really did. And I went back to that, you know, that the clubhouse that a week later, you know, and I went to my, you know, that same person. I said, you are not going to believe this. And he was just like, you know, he didn't react to, you know, what I was saying. And he's like, oh, yeah, what's that? You know, I said, I'm ready to take the plunge. And he was like, oh, cool. Like, he knew.
Right. Like, yeah, I got you.
Yeah. You know, and I was like, for me, it was like, he's not going to believe this. You know, like, he is never going to believe this in a million years. And he was like, but he knew. And, you know, we prayed and, you know, and I didn't know what taking the plunge meant, you know, like, do we have to go take courses and have a seance and answer to a panel of people in suits and, you know, like, I don't
know. Is there a test?
Right. Do I have to take a test? You know, I mean, maybe that's how I could get out of it. But either way, I was ready. Like, the questions that I had that were preventing me from, like, even opening that door crack, they were no longer there. They had been removed.
Yeah, it's, you know Batman.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah, so Batman's a good friend of mine, and we were talking the other day, and we were talking about the rescue mission, and he said something I've never heard, but it is so true and so amazing. But he said, the men at the mission, or, you know, the people at the homeless camp, or you, or anybody, are as important to the kingdom is Billy Graham. Oh. God didn't choose Billy Graham because Billy Graham's going to save a million people. He chose him before he ever knew anything about him.
Right.
And he chose us too.
Right.
So when you say that, right, like, you know, your friend, and I know who it was, but your friend was like, sweet, he wasn't surprised. He wasn't surprised because you're as important to the kingdom as anybody else. Right. And he knew what God had in store.
Yeah. You know, they, you know, in scripture it says, you know, that we were pulled from the muck. Yeah. I was literally pulled from the muck, man. I really was. Like, I was, as far as having a conversation, you know, I was still feeling all those really miserable, you know, in a miserable way. But I was like, at least in that moment, I knew that, like, that Jesus was going to have my backs on, you know what I'm saying? He was part of that brotherhood too.
It's like a hope.
Yeah. Right. It wasn't, honestly, for me, even at that point, it wasn't even hope. It was just, it was a realization. It was an awakening of the sense that, like, look, man, he don't care that, he don't care about all that stuff. It don't make any sense. And honestly, that's kind of like, for me, that's what I kind of felt like how I am, you know, like, I don't care that you're dirty. I don't care, you know, with the brotherhood. I don't care that you're maybe a little bit of a mental patient. I still got your back, you know, I don't care that, you know, you're poor. I still got your back. It's kind of like I had like a pride. And in that moment, I felt like Jesus was saying to me, like, dude, you think about all that crazy stuff. I could care less about it. You're my boy.
Yeah.
You know, like, you're wasting your time. And it really was like, I felt like, yeah, I mean, like, okay, I get it. So anyway, you know, we prayed and I prayed to Jesus for the first time that night and at the clubhouse and I went home. And my very first prayer to Jesus Christ was, all right, Jesus, you know, I mean, I'm starting the conversation. I'm tired and I want to die. And you'd be doing me a real big favor, you know. I mean, if you answer prayers, you'd be doing me a real big favor if you took me out, you know. I mean, I don't care at this point. I don't care if a plane falls out of the sky, if I die in a horrific accident, if I get shot, or just what, you know, and the life I was living, like, all of these things are, you know, minus the plane. These are all, like,
it could have
viable options, right. You know? So I was just like, I'm cool with it, you know, but like, I don't even have the strength to get up. Like, that's really how I felt, you know? And that was my first prayer. It wasn't thank you for this or thank you for that or holy this. I was just like, please do me a favor and take me out, man, because I can't come back from this, you know?
Yeah. Now, clearly he didn't answer that prayer.
He didn't know. He did answer my prayer, but in
not that one.
Not the way I thought.
That's right.
I immediately got unbelievably ill. Yeah. Like, immediately. And I don't mean like, oh, my stomach hurt. I was so sick and had such a high fever, like immediately, like within hours. I was hallucinating. It was unbelievable. I have never been that sick in my life. And that quick, it came on. It was like, I felt like my body was being like wrung out, you know?
Yeah.
And my second prayer was, thank you, Jesus, for letting me die in my own bed. You heard my prayer. You know, you heard my prayer. I mean, I would have taken any of that other stuff, you know, the motorcycle accidents or whatever. But you heard my prayer. You really are real. You're going to let me die. Because I really thought like I'm dying.
Yeah,
I'm dying. This is like that's how bad I felt. You know, I was having it was extreme. And I fell asleep praying. And thanking really being grateful that he was letting me die in my own bed. I was actually kind of crying, like kind of happy. Like I was like, there were a little bit of tears of joy. And I fell asleep like that.
When you're so unhappy and you've like dreamed about it and prayed for it and wanted it, right? To know that you're feeling that that's going to happen.
Yeah.
Right? When you feel that's going to happen, there is a joy.
Yeah. I certainly feel that's when I felt hope.
Okay.
That's when I felt hope that I was going to die, that he knew that I had just reached the end, you know, and he was going to be like, you suffered enough, man. You know, I got you, whatever. And he was saying that, but just the outcome was going to be different because I fell asleep and I woke up the next morning and I had the energy of a 16-year-old kid and all that pain, that emptiness, that depression, that anxiety, that fear, all of that stuff. It was like, I couldn't even remember how it felt to feel that. And I was trying. And then for a second, for a little while, I actually thought I had died because I felt so different. I felt so different. I looked different. I had energy and it freaked me out.
Yeah.
It really freaked me out. And what ended up happening is it freaked me out so bad. I isolated for 3 days trying to figure out what happened. It's like I knew that I prayed to Jesus, but I was trying to figure out what happened. Like, how did I go from being that sick to, you know what I'm saying, to falling asleep and waking up and not only not being sick, but feeling as good as I did.
Yeah.
And every day I would, you know, day in and day out, I just, maybe it was this, oh, it couldn't have been that. You know, maybe it was this, oh, it couldn't have been that. And then on the third day, I said, well, what do you think it was? And I literally heard, you called out to Jesus Christ and he answered you. And when it was like, I knew it the whole time, it was just I had to get there. And it took 3 days for me to get to that point. And the week prior, when I had, you know, talked to my friend and I prayed, right after I prayed, he said, you know, it suggested that soon thereafter you say this prayer, you get baptized. And my immediate thought, I said, oh, yeah, cool. But what I thought was, I'm not doing that. No way, dude.
You want me to go down to the river?
Yeah, you want me to get into a cauldron and do some, you know, is a Ouija board involved in this? Right, you know, like, I'm not I'm not doing that. So when I woke up and I experienced that for 3 days, and on that third day when I was like, hey, man, you know, Jesus, this is a real thing. And he answered you and he's got your back. I could not wait to show my public commitment and be baptized. I had a completely different insight. At that moment, I was all in. I literally was all in because I knew that nothing I could do or anything that I, you know, anyone that I know could not get me to where I was at that moment. And this is like, this is pretty much day one for me, you know?
Right.
I mean,
it
took a week, but it was like a week.
It's ground zero.
Right. This is ground zero.
Yeah.
And ground zero was like, it wasn't a firecracker that went off. It was an atomic bomb, you know? It really was. And, you know, it's like I always say, it was like I opened that door a crack and, you know, for Jesus, and he kicked it off the hinges and evicted every demon out of my life.
And that's what he does.
Yeah, I didn't know that. Yeah. I didn't go to Jesus thinking, okay, my life is going to get better. I had no expectations, man. I didn't have any expectations. You know, I didn't say, I'm going to be going to church. I'm going to be doing none of that. Like, I wasn't considering any of that.
Right.
I was just kind of like starting the conversation. That was it. That was as far as I was willing to go at that point. A week later, I felt completely different.
That's usually how it works.
Yeah, but I didn't know.
Yeah.
You know, when I would hear people say, oh, I'm saved. I thought that was a figure of speech, man. I thought that was like, you know, I'm a Weebelo, or I'm a Cub Scout. Oh, I'm saved, you know. Like,
right. Like, I got a bachelor's
degree. Yeah, you know, I just thought it was one of those things until I realized, like, yo, I was really saved. Like, he really pulled me from the muck.
You know, here's something that I've heard this story
before, right?
I've seen you tell the story before. The 3 days. Have you ever thought about or sat and thought about the significance of 3 days?
I have. Yeah, I certainly have. You know, I mean, going through what I went through and just like figuring out not only was I not dead,
yeah.
I was very much alive.
Yeah.
And, from a flesh point of view, that makes zero sense.
Yeah.
You know, from a this worldly view, that makes zero sense. Like, yeah. How does that happen?
Yeah.
But from a spiritual point of view, it makes a whole lot of sense.
Yeah. The number 3 is important.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I pulled up a document that I had written before.
Okay.
Right? So the number 3 exists like 467 times in the Bible.
All right.
When God says something 3 times, it's important.
Mm-hmm.
Right? He'll say like, holy, holy, holy. On the third day.
Right.
Right?
Very significant.
Very significant. There were 3 patriarchs, right? Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob.
Okay. That one eluded me for sure.
Right. Early Christians, if you look at like Psalms 55:17, they would say prayers 3 times a day.
Okay.
Right. In the morning, evening, morning, and noon, cry out in distress and hear my voice. When Christ was born, they bought 3 gifts, frankincense, gold, and myrrh.
Right.
Right. There were 3 angels in Revelations. Of course, we have the Trinity.
Mm-hmm.
But there was also 3 nails on the cross.
Right.
There was also 3 crosses, one on each side of him.
Mm-hmm.
So when you said 3 days, I'm like, holy crap, it's 3 days. Like,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Because in Jewish culture, when Christ died, the reason he rose on the third day was because the third day meant you were really dead. That was what it meant. You couldn't, like, you weren't just sick.
You weren't really sleeping. Dead. Right. You
weren't asleep.
Right.
And so he waited until they knew he was really dead to rise. So you were sick until you were really dead to this world.
Yeah.
And then you could rise.
Yeah. And you know, it's so I've never really made, I made some of those connections, but I never made all of those connections. So it's like, again, it's, you know, back then there's lots of things I didn't understand.
Yeah.
You know, it was very fresh to me. And, you know, and that was actually another hang up for me before coming to Christ. Like, I can't do that because I'm not an expert in those subjects.
Yeah.
You know, like, I can't. You know, I can't do that. I'm not going to be a newbie. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know any of that stuff. I thought I needed to know stuff.
I said, if you've listened to any of my podcasts at the very beginning, I'm like, I don't know what I'm doing.
Right.
I didn't go to seminary. Right. I'm not a theologian. I read my Bible.
Right. Right. Right.
Like, yeah. I don't. There's people who got PhDs.
Literally, they're professional Christians.
That's right.
Yeah.
And praise God for them.
Yeah, absolutely. They're totally needed, you know?
Not me.
Yeah, that's just not where, same here. I don't, that's currently not where I am. Who knows? You know, it's like,
never say never, right?
You know, I mean, it's because at this point I'm just walking, but, yeah. So after that, you know, I was still in the club. I was still in the club and people were saying, how are you going to be in the club? And, you know, and be a Christian and all this other stuff. And I just knew that I didn't even get me to where I was. You know, at that point, everything I did got me to the point where I was before I gave it to, you know, just yeah. had the conversation. Yeah. So I was just kind of like, well, I don't know. I don't know. So I prayed and I said, Lord, you know, if I'm not supposed to be in this club, you got to let me know. But I don't mean like subtle. You got to, I mean a 2x4 upside the head kind of.
Right. Like I better feel it.
Right. Because if not, I'm going down with the ship for sure. And I stayed with the club for maybe a little bit over a year after that. And and then, you know, Christ, and through that, you know, I was certainly seeking, you know, Christ out and reading more and looking at scripture and listening to different pastors and just kind of learning more, you know, and growing. I felt secure. That hole that I had felt my entire life in my heart, it was gone.
Yeah.
To the point where I didn't even like, as a matter of fact, not only was it gone, but it was replaced with something that like, it tickles, you know, it feels good. If I feel that, like, even on bad days, man, you know, right. I've had some serious bad days too. And you know, I mean, you've known some of the stuff I've gone through, you know, with my parents.
Well, I think what people, maybe people don't talk about it that much,
right?
But I know for me, and I'm sure you've been through this too. Before I came to Christ, the devil didn't care about me.
Right.
I was already on his team.
Right. I was working for him. Like, I mean, I was putting in work.
I mean, I told people, like, heaven don't want me and hell's afraid I'm going to take over.
Right.
He didn't care. Never looked at me. But when I came to Christ, well, that's when the battle begins. I think sometimes, unfortunately, sometimes Christians forget to tell people that.
Yeah.
Like, yes, this is the most amazing thing in the world. This relationship, not religion, but this relationship that we can have with Christ, with our Lord, is the best thing going. Yeah. There's nothing better. But even Christ tells us we're going to be persecuted.
Sure.
We're going to have trials. It's going to be a struggle.
You know, that's, you know, what you just said, that's really profound. The other side of that is we also get the armor of the Lord.
Absolutely.
And we could put it's not we're going to go out and just get our butts kicked all the time and we have no defense. It's not only do we have a defense, we have the guaranteed ultimate winning of defense every single time. We are never going to lose.
That's right.
Period. There's no question about it. You know, think about it. If you were a boxer and you knew no matter who you fought, no matter how big they were, no matter how bad they were, at the end, even if you got a black eye, you were still getting the belt. You were still going to be.
Absolutely. We're never going to lose.
We're never going to lose.
But when you're a new Christian, did you know that?
I didn't know that. Right. And that's the thing. I did not know that. But because there were people willing to meet me where I was.
That's key.
You know, not where the, you know, this high level of understanding was, where I was, this basic, like, I'm going to give you little bits and pieces. And some of it I understood, some of it I didn't understand. I'd take notes or make mental notes or whatever and say, whatever. But now I'm curious. So what did you mean by that? And I could research it on my own and that would lead into other topics and other things. Before I knew it, I had a lot of knowledge had been revealed to me.
Right.
And I started putting tools in my toolbox, you know? So, you know, day one, yeah, I could probably wash the windows. But 6 months into it, yeah, I could change the oil and, do a tune-up and whatever. And and here's the thing. It's you know, it's not like you fill your toolbox and then you're just your toolbox full and you're done. It's like you get another toolbox, man. You get another toolbox. You know, you'll not just be a great mechanic, but you'll also be a great auto body guy and a great, you know.
That's right.
It's like it grows and grows and grows, you know. And the other thing that for me early on that I would question myself is like, man, I don't know anything, you know. And how can I even talk about this stuff with Christians that have been active in their faith for so long? They know so much and I don't know anything. And then it was revealed to me. It's not what I knew. It was my level of sincerity.
That's absolutely right.
You know, it was like, look, if you have something to say that you've learned since you've been a Christian and you're being sincere, if that sincerity is in your heart, it's just as relevant as somebody that's been a Christian their entire life.
So, absolutely.
I didn't know that. You know, yeah. I felt like the devil was trying to convince me to don't say anything because you're inferior. You're not a professional. You're not, you know, just be quiet and stay over on the side and isolate yourself and don't participate, you know. And through that, I also learned, like, That's how, you know, that's the spiritual warfare. That's how they're going to try to convince me or trick me. And you know what? It's easy to be distracted, man. I'm still flesh and blood. You know, I still carry the burden of flesh. And, you know, with that, I'm distracted or I have desires of, you know, and all that. And it's real easy to get caught up in that. But the more, you know, what happens is as I see Christ, I get more tools and I know how to handle situations that used to baffle me. And I'm able to address obstacles and say, oh yeah, that's a big obstacle. I got every single tool in my box for that obstacle. Let's keep it moving, man. You know, let's keep it moving. And, you know, and a lot of times because of the people I'm around, whether they're, you know, been Christians for, you know, a while or new Christians, they're there, they're going, man, I never knew we could do with that. You know, I never knew we could do that. Or, you know, I learned a lot from this, you know, and I'm just like, hey, man, I'm glad you learned a lot from it. This is me practicing because this is what I need to continue to do. So that's really what I, you know, that's now my life has changed so dramatically. And it's not because of work that I did. That's the truth. The only thing I did was seek Christ. And through seeking Christ, things were revealed to me. Tools were revealed to me. And I've been blessed. I've been given a lot of blessings. In my own opinion, things that I don't feel I even deserve. You know? Do you really deserve that? Well, I mean, if you're asking my opinion, I don't feel I deserve, but it's not my opinion that matters. It's God's opinion.
That's right.
It's what, you know, there's things in the Bible I say, well, I don't agree with that. And it's fine that I don't agree with it, but that's what it is. And that's what I'm going to follow. That's, you know, I mean, it's like, I still have free will.
Yeah. You can't dispute it.
You can't dispute it. I mean, that's the truth, you know? And I'm also, I have a perception based on what I do know, which is, I also know is not everything.
Right.
You know?
You know, it's interesting that, how much God has to love us to give us free choice.
Yeah.
I think, you know, people, I think for some non-Christians or people that are struggling with their faith, I've heard a lot of people say, well, you know, God is all powerful, all knowing, omnipresent, right? The Alpha and the Omega. Why does he let this happen?
Right.
Right. And at the end of the day, it's, God's not letting it happen. He gave us free choice.
Right.
It's happening because we're sinners.
Right. If you choose to right? sin, and it says it, you want to sin leads to what?
Everything. Death.
Death. You know, I mean, like, you know, so it's like,
everything bad.
Yeah. Look, man, if you're surprised by that outcome after you've been told time and time again, like, you're just not listening.
That's right.
Or you're just, you're choosing to ignore it, you know?
Yeah. It's crazy.
And, you know, now, like I said, I'm all in. I've, you know, I'm a proof is in the pudding kind of guy. I need proof. I need to see it. Well, let me tell you, I see it all day, every day, throughout my day. Yeah. I see things happen that they are spiritual. It is the Holy Spirit working in my life and working in other people's lives. You know, I have, you know, it's like I couldn't figure out how to, like, well, I still want to do all these bad things, man. You know, I do. And I did. I didn't stop doing bad things. I continue to do bad things. But I prayed and I said, God, I do want to change. I want to become better. I don't know how to get away from this. And slowly, my opinions and my desires, they just started to change. Not because of work I did. It's because Jesus and the Holy Spirit were working on me the whole time. And if I, you know, and just staying in contact and saying, hey, I'm just checking in. And sometimes that's why I pray, hey, Jesus, I'm just checking in, man. Yeah. I'm just saying, you know, you're on my mind.
Yeah, I'm not, and I'm sure you're probably the same way. I'm not this corporate prayer guy.
Right? Not me at all.
I'm not, you know, you hear about people who are like intercessory prayer warriors. And like, my prayer, I'm on the bike.
Yeah.
Lord, take me where you need to go today.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
That's it.
I mean, some, you know, childhood prayers, you know, like my brain is so, you know, I've damaged my brain between drugs and some other injuries and just whatever that I get very confused and I lose my train of thought. Simple childhood prayers in the middle of it. I totally forget I just forget them.
Yeah.
So it's like, I'm just talking to, and I still, you know, I still work through those prayers and I still say those prayers. I'll read them or whatever. But when I talk to, you know, when I talk to Christ, I'm just talking to Christ. It's like,
yeah, it's like me and you talking right
now. Yeah. And I could be, and here's the thing. It's like, I'm at the point where I'm just like, hey, look, I'm just going to level. I'm just going to tell you how it is. I know this is crazy. I mean, I know it's crazy, but I'm just going to be honest with you. I love this. I enjoy this so much, but I'm just letting you know. You know, I know it's bad, but I'm just letting you know. I'm just keeping it real with you.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I've had things, you know, that I addictions in my life, I just never understood, like, how I couldn't even fathom not having them in my life. And now it's like, I think about them, and once again, not because of work I've done, I think about them, I'm like, that's so unappealing now.
Right.
You know, I don't want to participate in
right.
that. I have this thing, it's kind of like a way of me to gauge my desires, my human desires, my earthly desires versus, you know, having a relationship with God. Because, you know, when I'm praying, I say, okay, this is what I don't want to sin. You know, I really don't want to sin. That's the real thing. I want to be a better person. I want to continue to follow Christ and see Christ out. But my body wants this and my body. So I refer to my body as my drunk roommate.
Okay. You know, I like it.
It's like, you ever have that roommate or a close friend? He's kind of a drunk. You love him, but every time you go out to the movies, he wants to stand up and take his pants off and shake his willy around and say, man, this is going to be so funny.
Yeah,
and you're like, dude, don't do that. Because, I mean, you know, yeah, funny, but you're going to get arrested. You're going to get us all in trouble. We're not going to be able to see the movie. Just chill out, man. Just kind of chill out. That's how I talk to my, you know.
Your body's the drunk friend.
The drunk roommate.
One to show his willy to everyone.
Yeah, you know. Hey, man, let's go to the shake him spot. No drunk roommate. We're not doing that. And it's fun because I say that. And it's for me, because of how my mind works and whatever, and I kind of like, I need little landmarks, you know. When that stuff happens and I could pick it up and I could say, yep. That's the drunk roommate. Hey, that's dude, right. We're not doing that, you know. And it prevents me from getting into a lot of stuff.
Yeah. I like that. The drunk roommate.
A drunk roommate. And, you know, because the drunk roommate still wants to go out and do, you know, drunk roommate stuff, you know?
And thinks it's a great idea. That never ends well.
Right. You know, and thinks, and to the drunk roommate, that is a great idea. That is, well, you know.
It's going
to
be fun.
Right. It's going to be fun. It's going to be a lot of sinning or whatever, you know?
It's going to be fun.
And just because I open one door and I know right behind that door is that one little sin. Oh, I just want that one little sin, and it's right there. I can see it. I open up that door and I get that one little sin, and I'm so focused on it that I don't see what else comes through that door.
That's right. Everything else.
Right. You know, you don't see that. I'm just like, I got my little sin. It wasn't that bad. Yeah, but you just opened the door for a lot of other things. And I had to, like, you know, I had come to realize those things. And because I seek God out, I got the armor, and I know how to combat that now.
Praise God.
You know, it really is. I pray every day that, you know, to Christ, and I just say it. Look, I am willing. I am willing. You just got to show me the way. Whatever you need, you know, whatever you want to use me for, I am 100% willing. You want me to get rid of all my stuff? I am 100% willing. Now, that sounds extreme for somebody that may be coming into their faith or thinking about it. And in the beginning, I would have viewed it that way too. Like, that's extreme. What are you, in a cult or something? Like,
right. You're
crazy. But now, because of witnessing in my own life, just in my own life, and I've witnessed things in other people, but in my own life, quiet things that I don't have to explain to anybody else or whatever, I've witnessed the miracles and the blessings of Jesus Christ. So I know. I don't think. I don't wonder. I know it's true. And there's nothing that is going to change my mind. You could, you know, you can hit me with every hurricane and every kind of violent storm you want, but nothing's going to blow me off this foundation. I might get wet, but that foundation, it ain't going nowhere.
That's the way it should be, right? Yeah. Jesus says, like the man who built his house on the rock.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
It was sturdy. It had a good foundation. It didn't go anywhere.
Yeah. And I'm, you know, it's like, I'm very blessed. A lot of people, you know, there was a lot of people that are not in my life, you know, anymore. And, you know, they just kind of migrated away. It wasn't anything, you know, dramatic. And there's people that are in my life, and there's people that have been in my life that, because at this point, I'm so excited and so passionate about participating in my faith, not religion, my faith.
Yeah.
You know, because religion to me is unappealing, you know? Yeah. And I have a completely different understanding, but my faith and following the Bible what's in, if it's in the Bible, it's for me. If it's not in the Bible, it's not for me, you know?
I agree with that.
I don't give my rendition of what I think it, you know, it reads, or I don't do that. I don't apply it. It's, this is what's in the Bible, and that's what it is. But I've seen people in my life that had volatile relationships with Jesus Christ for what I would consider justified reasons, you know, from their perspective and their knowledge, that now have loving relationships with Jesus Christ. And not only that, but their lives have increased in joy and security. And, you know, when you can't deny that, you cannot deny that, man.
Yeah. It's a different, I don't even know the right words to use.
Right.
Right. Because that feeling, the feeling you have now, right there, it's just this, it's a security.
Yeah.
It's a happiness. It's
a certainty.
A certainty.
It's a certainty. Yeah.
It's a fullness.
Yeah.
Right. I was never full. Right. I love my wife. I love my kids. There was always something wrong.
Yeah.
Right. I could never sleep at night because in my mind is just a top running of all the things that could happen, did happen, would happen. Yeah. I got to do this. There was no peace. Right. But once you really have that relationship, there's a peace.
Yeah. And you know, it's like, I know no matter where I am, as long as I'm seeking Christ and I'm walking in that path, I'm exactly where I'm supposed to be.
Amen.
You know, and sometimes, the Lord will break your heart to save your life. He will.
Yeah, that's a hard one.
You know, it's a hard one, but, you know, I always equate it to, remember, you know, back in the day, they probably still have them. You get them little party favors. They're little boxes with squares in them, and you can move them around. Some of them have numbers. Some of them have pictures.
Yeah.
And you got to move them around to make a picture or get the number sequence. If you just looked at it and said, yeah, that's not a picture. Yeah, in this form, it's not a picture. I'm going to move it around. It's still not a picture. But eventually,
if you get it right,
it's a picture.
Yeah.
That's kind of what it is. You know how I equate that a lot of the things, because I find myself in places where I'm like, man, I don't really want to be here. I'm not really comfortable in this spot. But you know what? It's the Lord just moving around those pieces, man. Just roll with it. Don't fight it. Because if you fight it, you know, if you start undoing his moves, he's got to figure out a new strategy.
Right.
And it's going to take longer. So I certainly make a very obvious attempt to participate in what the Lord wants to do. But I also say, man, you can't be subtle. I'm still a hard head. You know, I need to know, like, man, I don't care if, you know, really, I don't care. Just show me. Hit me in the head with a 2x4.
That's right.
I'm good with it. You don't have to convince me.
And, you know,
just let me know.
Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. But, like, I'm an IT guy too. Right.
Right.
We know that.
Right.
And so to me, everything's a one or a zero.
Right.
Right. There's no middle ground.
Right.
And that was probably the hardest thing for me when I was coming to Christ, right? When I was like, okay, here, this is, it's real, but I got to figure out how it's real.
Right.
Right. And so I'm a huge apologetic fan. I don't know if you've studied apologetics at all, but it's really, you know, how you prove the Bible.
Right.
And amazing ways that you can prove it.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Amazing ways. But that's, for me, it's a one or a zero. It's either right or wrong.
Right.
You can't, you know, like, there's things that are not in the Bible that people say or believe that are Christians. And I'm like, can you give me the verse or chapter?
What woke church did you hear that from?
Right? Where did that come from? Yeah. Just let me know.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Just show me the chapter and verse. Book, chapter, verse. That's all I care about.
I mean, because it's could be in there. Maybe I just missed it or whatever.
And that's why I ask.
But if it's in the Bible, it's for me. If it's not, it's not for me.
Like, that doesn't sound real. Can you tell me which book, chapter, and verse that is?
Right.
You know, yeah. Look, Bern, this has been awesome.
Yeah, I'm glad. Thanks for inviting me out, man. I always love participating in stuff like this and just, you know, staying active in my faith, and it's always good to see you too. Getting to see us, you know, it's awesome, man. So thank you.
You know, we should definitely do it again, but maybe next time we'll just talk about something else not anybody's story, right?
Just topics and stuff like that. I honestly, man, I love doing this.
Yeah, me too.
So, and I could, you know, we could, you know, turn off the mics and I could continue to, you know, go, we could talk all, you know, till I literally just need to fall asleep.
Yeah, that's my problem too.
Yeah, yeah.
But before we leave, is there one last nugget, one thing you would want to tell people?
I would just say that, this is what I'd say. I'd say that, you know, if you're trying to figure this stuff out, or you're in your faith or whatever, and you're tired, it's okay that you're tired. I get tired, but don't give up. And if you feel like it's unfair, it probably is unfair, but don't give up. And if you feel, you know, like you want to give up, just don't give up. Yeah, just don't give up.
Don't give up.
You know, just keep going. Because if you're seeking, you know, if you're seeking the Lord, he's listening. He's just working that puzzle.
And he will reveal it when it's time.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Look, thanks again. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you, man. Thank you.
Hey, everybody, it's Rick with the Nomad Pastor Podcast. Hey, look us up. We're on all the different podcast platforms. And subscribe and give us a like. Thanks. Have a blessed day.